Shall we begin with the words of the Sufi invocation? Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. We begin in the name of the One. The One who has always been and will always be. The outer and the inner. The One whose name is every name, whose form is every form, and whose essence transcends all name and all form. The One who is closer to us than our jugular vein. The One who is closer to us than our very selves. The Self of all selves. The intelligence working through every manifestation of consciousness. The vision. Seeing through all eyes. The Self of ourself, the Self of every being, the reality of being, to whom we all belong, from whom we come, to whom we return, and by whom we live. Whose hand has molded this form that we wear? Whose purposefulness directs the course of our life through episodes of forgetting and confusion and darkness toward the horizon of discovery, inspiration, and illumination. The One who is with us in our forgetting and in our remembering. The One who awakens in our awakening. and whose awakening in creation is the very purpose of creation. The one who's self-revealing is the cause of all that unfolds itself here on earth. The 70,000 veils of light and darkness must be drawn as covers over the face of the infinite, if only that the veils may be lifted one by one, so that face is disclosed in a rapture of revelation. Hence, our existence on the earth as creatures, hence the odyssey of the soul's journey, descending into the body and returning again to spirit. Hence the great game of hide and seek. In complete union, there is no love. Love is pure potentiality, but not actuality, because there is no lover, no beloved, no distance between them. And so the ancient unity necessarily drew in the veils, proliferated the gazes, estranged consciousness from its essence, to produce the distance which brings perspective. Something seen too close cannot be seen. Only seen from a distance do the lineaments appear. But if the lineaments are beautiful, the witness desires to transcend the distance, to unite with the object of beauty. The whole world was contained in all of its possibilities as pure potentiality in the unseen. Just imagine, before this lifetime of yours and the billions of life stories of one's fellow denizens of the earth, all of these stories, all of these journeys already prefigured, latent, dormant, hidden in eternity. And now, here now, with creation, with the chronicle of the earth, with the passage of the generations, with the descent of the soul, it manifests in the temporal realm, in time and space. Only to be at last abstracted again into the infinite. This is the soul's journey. It's like a block of stone, a boulder, which contains within it every conceivable sculpture, every possible form is already there in the block of stone, layered one upon another. So many variations, gestures, expressions, all present in the block. There's nothing new under the sun. However, the uncovery of a single face from that block is a discovery indeed. To discover it, the other faces, the other forms must be eliminated. So there is a reduction in the possibilities. But in the reduction, the infinite becomes finite. And thus throughout the universe and the multiverse of universes, in innumerable forms, the infinite is ephemeralized. And in this is a great reduction. Each of us is created upon the image of God, and yet denuded of the vastness, the tremendousness of the totality. Shrunk down in our consciousness, and sometimes in that reduction, oftentimes, consciousness undergoes a distortion. Entailing the fears, the anxieties, the resentments, the lashings out that result from disconnection, from fragmentation. We've come this far, carried on the tide of the divine longing, the Ishq Ilahi. We've been swept from realms of vast peace, joy, bliss, and rapture into form, into name, into time and place and relationship and struggle and strife. And sometimes the descent is experienced as burdensome indeed. Because in descending, one takes on the weight of history, the burden of the ages, the fraught experiences and sufferings and humiliations of generation upon generation of struggling mortal men and women. The soul incarnating takes on the shadow of long years. What was free, what was boundaryless, what was in communion with the brimming effulgence of the ancient fountainhead of light, now walks in shadows among ghosts, apprehensive, heedless of its own origins, in doubt about the presence of the real. And if it was only this, if it was only that we were stranded, drifting, cut off, endarkened, we would not long survive here. But this universe is continuously renewed from its source, reanimated. In fact, nothing here subsists autonomously. Nothing is a solid fact. Everything is perpetually recreated, lit up from within. And the message comes to the world, the message, the call of the whole to the fragment. Remember. It isn't the time of every soul yet to remember, or yet to remember deeply. But for every soul, at least unconsciously, the message is heard in glimmerings, in the night, in moments of clarity, in a breeze, intimations of the presence of the Absolute reach us. And the more that one detects these moments and turns toward them, orients toward the rising of the sun, the rising of the existential sun, the sun of being, dawning upon the universe, the more responsive become the inner senses, and the message connects. One might ask, why doesn't the message immediately connect for everyone always? But we are here in a game of hide and seek. That is the nature of manifestation. It is simultaneously concealing and revealing, like a gauzy veil that conceals the face of the beloved, but not completely, so that one can discern through the shroud the traces of what allures. And it's precisely that allure that gives hope, that reanimates a numb heart, that elicits each next step on the path. We haven't always been locked into the minds that are ours now. And even now, in moments which one afterward forgets, sometimes in the day, but especially at night, consciousness eludes the boundaries of the conditioned mind and enters formless realms. The path, the inner path, is the process of consciously entering those realms so that they remain not the neglected backdrop of a life directed toward instrumentality, that is to say, preoccupation with advancing the interests of an identity which is, in the ultimate analysis, fictional, so subjective as to be delusional, fragmentary, and its victory is therefore pyrrhic. But when one learns to reconnect one's life with life itself on all of its planes of crystallization and dissolution, the narrative of the egoic self becomes just one thread in a multi-hued tapestry that keeps weaving fuller dimensions of meaningfulness. What is the origin of the self? We take for granted ourself. We put that self at the center of everything. But what is the self? Where has it come from? Where is it going? What is it made of? The self reaches a certain self-awareness in childhood. Before the ego coheres, it's difficult to trace one's memory, but perhaps you have glimmerings of memory from the earliest moments of your incarnate life, flashes of impressions from infancy. Because our thinking is so associated with our conditioned concepts and sensory impressions, particularly vision, it's difficult to trace memory back to the time before the conditioning of the mind and before we opened our eyes, back to the months in the womb, the rahm. But you might find that when becoming still, becoming silent, and listening to your heart, the beat of the heart, a primal sensation resurfaces prior to one's active, mobile grasping involvement in the world, when one floated in the womb, nourished directly through the umbilical cord. But even to speak in such terms, to speak of the umbilical cord, is to semantically be drawn into conceptualizations that come later. If one wants to discover anew the primal state, it can't be grasped through language, but rather through direct sensing. Sensing into the interior of the body now reveals a palimpsest, a manuscript that has been inscribed over and over again. And the deeper you delve into the inscriptions, the further you plunge into the earliest traces. And in fact, one may be carried over into the time before time, prior even to conception, and discover the subtle body from which the physical body emerged as its material manifestation. And behind that, discover the light field from which the subtle body crystallized. And behind that light field, discover the light that has no beginning and no end, the Nur al-Anwar, the light of lights. It requires sensing within one's identity a dimension that is not contingent upon what one sees when one looks in the mirror, Now, one might speculate that before conception, one was, if anything at all, a tabula rasa, a blank slate. And that the process of becoming a person only begins when the mother's DNA and the father's DNA intermingle. But nothing appears fully formed. The study of nature shows this. Nothing manifests fully fledged, and a mystical investigation of inner nature reveals that prior to conception, already the soul had undergone a descent that our emanation from the formless is incremental, passing through subtle stages, step by step. Silence becomes vibration, vibration proliferates. Light appears, and light proliferates just as if one considers the sun, one sees the radiant disk of the sun is so effulgent that its halo is almost undifferentiable from its core. That is to say, the rays of the sun do not yet distinguish themselves in close proximity to the solar disk. It's only as shafts, sheets and shafts of light flash out that with further progress the rays winnow down and become distinguishable, refracting and reflecting. So the soul in its earliest origins is hardly to be distinguished from the divine light which is its matrix. So creation proceeds in degrees, and in the very center, there is as yet hardly any basis for delineating self or other. In Paradise Lost, the angels marvel at the love-making of Adam and Eve and say that amongst us, love-making is like breeze upon breeze. No two separate bodies colliding, but currents interflowing. And where does one begin and where does the other end? So it is in the earliest perceptions of the soul. There is not yet this finitude, this conception of boundedness. And yet already the first increments of separation are beginning to be felt. Very subtly, but it's beginning. And that initial increment of distance allows for a possibility in the heavens. And that possibility we may call glorification. If there was no distance at all, there could be no glorification. But with that little interval comes this sense of the encounter with the Absolute. An encounter which is not yet alienated by extreme distance and forgetting, but it's like the position of Mercury vis-a-vis the sun, so close, spinning round, or like the moth spinning round the flame, enraptured, singeing its wings. Being so close to the unveiled face of limitless beauty that is, in fact, so awesome, so magnificent, that the very heat of it, you might say, the very power of it prohibits the crystallization of the angels into concrete forms. They're melted by the divine face. They're melted. They must live and move in a protean, molten state because of the sheer intensity of the proximity of the Godhead. So the angels are not a different species from ourselves. We are angels. We are angels that have subsequently taken on further raiments, further robes in the very inner wrappings of what we have taken on to wear, we find still now the angelic witness. But we identify so much with the robe that we wear that the mind really believes that when the robe must be discarded, it dies, life ends. The robe is the life. Whereas the one who has rediscovered the angelic witness knows that to remove a robe is to live on. One's load lightened. Of course, removing that robe means removing a certain mode of being. Our earthly existence is a mode that has its own circumstances. Means of knowing, means of being. But this is for a time. Underneath, deep down, the angelic light remains. How do we know the nature of this way of being as compared with the human experience which has so preoccupied us? Through all planes of being, love is the central theme. You might say, how can it be so when I look out on a world and see so many numb hearts, so much apathy? This too is an episode in the narrative of love. The forgetting that precedes remembering. You might say, how can love be the central theme when I see not only apathy but hatred? But this too is part of the narrative of love. It's the distortion of love confused, confined, contorted, but still, it's love. So the whole manifestation is the theater of love, and all of the different stages of the soul's journey exemplify different aspects of love. Murshid said, love manifests among the animals as passion. Among the humans as affection. Among the jinn as admiration. And among the angels as glorification. And so if one wishes to uncover the angelic dimension of one's humanity, rediscover glorification. and finds this in prayer. But not any prayer, not distracted prayer, which is the outer performance of a ritual devoid of feeling. The prayer of glorification might even have no outer sign as long as the soul is rapturously attesting to the glory of God, turning to the majesty of the divine face in awe. There is prayer. And the ritual practices of the hallowed spiritual traditions of the world are all settings for this gem. But the setting is nothing without the fire of that ruby. So to enter the realm of the angels is to glorify. And to glorify, one must suspend cynicism, jadedness, sarcasm, guile, conniving, all of this egoic dross must be cleared away. So that when the sediment sinks down, the pure liquid of the soul becomes transparent again. Simple again and pure and loving and trusting and beholden eternally to the good, the beautiful. One is helped by remembering that everything that we see has an inner dimension, an inner life, and that there is much more to reality than what our eyes see. The inner universe opens up, inner beings reveal themselves, and one sees more and more that the whole cascade of illuminated souls pouring out from the ancient fountainhead of illumination is one concatenation of light. No being is autonomous or separate. All is infused by life from the common source. And that source, traced to its wellspring, is ever more nectarous and ambrosial and intoxicating. There's a freshness in the primacy that one finds at the heart of everything that renews one's spirit and naturally, irrepressibly evokes a response of pure adoration. And so we are moved to join the chants of the seraphim and cherubim intoning Subuhun. The holy. Subuhun, the holy. Qudusun. Endlessly sacred. Rab al-Malaika. The one to whom the legions of the angels eternally belong. Warruh. And bestower of the Holy Spirit that descends and sacralizes the earth. This is the angelic chant, which we may join with turning first to the right when we say Subuhun, then to the left, Qudusun, then rising up, Rabb al-Malaika, and down, Warruh. Subuhun, Qudusun, Rabb al-Malaika, Subuhun, Qudusun, Rabb al-Malaika, Warruh, 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 Subuhun, Qudusun, Rabb al-Malaika, Warruh. Subuhun, Qudusun, Rabb al-Malaika, Warruh. Subuhun. Qudusun Rabb al-Malaika wa Ruh Subun 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 Qudusun Rabb al-Malaika wa Just for a moment, we turn our attention to the very top of the body, to the fontanelle, which in an infant's head is a soft spot, a seam in the plates of the skull. And even after the skull is knitted together, subtly there remains a soft spot there, an aperture, which is open to the vastness above. Recognizing the sky as a space drenched in celestial rays, which continuously downpour upon the earth, upon our bodies. And one feels particularly at the crown, the pitter-patter, of these streaming waves. You could even, as you inhale, turn your eyes up and feel the light pouring down through the skylight at the top of the body. And then relax your eyes again. And when you're ready, we can open our eyes again. And now we've come to the time for our morning break.